I'd rather take buildings that that I'm very familiar with, that have given me a special inspirations to further design, let's say. And I would pick the three as the Marseille apartments of Le Corbusier, Taliesin West of Wright, and the 860 Lakeshore Drive Towers of Mies van der Rohe. Now, the first, the Marseille apartments, why? Because, again, he carries as far as possible aesthetic experimentation in the modern style. The modern style of architecture is one in which we emphasize the weightlessness, the lightness, the inherent characteristic of skeleton construction. Corbusier has carried that much further than anybody else by holding the building up on great expressive hands, almost expressionistic. But they are regularly spaced. They keep the basic rhythm, the boom, boom, boom of the bass rhythm that's required in any building. That they make this massive building float and keep light, which is of the essence of modern. Then above it, he has a reticulation. He's carried his glass back, not to make this eternal flat skin effect that all modern buildings in New York seem to get by trying to keep the outer walls thin for economic reasons. He's pushed them way back 20 feet sometimes, to keep the hollow, honeycomb-like effect of the entire building. Then, thirdly and most important, he's carried sculptural effects on the roof materials to such a degree that if you were just to consider it large sculpture, it would still count. It does seem to me there's no contradiction between architecture and sculpture. An architect has a perfect right to make sculptural forms out of his needs, as Corbusier does out of his chimneys, to make an expressive unity to bind the whole composition together against the sky. It makes for shadows, for delight, for contrast that you can't get any other way. Taliesin West, of course, is quite a different matter. Frank Lloyd Wright belongs to the ages. There, I think, the essence of his house is the human element, the procession through the building. I once counted the turns that you make. You approach the building till you get into what he calls the cove, the Holy of Holies, where you finally sit down with the high priest. And the number of turns, I think, was 45. Now, he is playing with you as you walk through that space. He stops your car, as any good architect should, 200 or 300 feet from the entrance. It doesn't rain enough to make any difference. But then you start down the steps, up a step, to the left, to the right, down along a very long pergola, and you turn to the right to get out onto that famous prow, and you take those few steps down onto that magnificent view that's been concealed from you for 200 or 300 feet of walking. Then you see Arizona stretched out as he meant it to you. And then you turn and go into the little tent room where the man, of course, understands light better than anybody in the world. And he has this tent light that trickles, filters down through into this private room before he opens any flaps. You're just bathed in this canvas light. Then when he opens the flap onto the little secret garden, you say, I can't, there are no more surprises. There can't be any more unfolding of spaces. But there are. And you get into this private courtyard with the green grass and the falling water, which I notice he's just changed. He now has a series of round circular pads surrounding the sea. Then you finally get into the cove, and just when you're used to Frank Lloyd Wright's 6-foot ceiling, it has a 14-foot ceiling. And the fireplace runs the full length of the building. There are no windows all of a sudden, and no canvas. You're entirely enclosed in the middle of this experience. And by the time you get there, you realize that you've been handled and petted and twisted much as a symphony will caress you, or an opera, until you get to the crisis. That, perhaps, is not even architecture in the same sense that the Corbusier building is, but they both have something to tell later architects. Then the third building, 860 Lakeshore Drive, is quite different. There is a master builder at work, as the other two don't know anything about building, you might say, to exaggerate slightly. Mies knows all about building. He knows before he puts a line to paper how it's going to look. But he also knows what you have to admit is going to have to be put in the building before you do it. And then he realizes more than that. He realizes what civilization we're in. You can't repeat Marseille. Who is going to be able to build something of the processional incredibleness of Taliesin West? But everyone can, and mostly does, build apartment houses. And the patterns which he has developed for sheathing the skeleton building is the first, yes, it is, certainly is, the first step in this economic problem, cum architectural problem, since Sullivan, who first used verticality to organize multi-story buildings. It's amusing to realize that the multi-story building is quite a new problem in architecture. Sullivan was the first to grapple with it. Richardson only built buildings five or six stories high that were still blown up one-story houses. But the Wainwright is a skyscraper. And the Wainwright thesis of the base, the vertical columns, the pilasters almost, and the heavy cornice have been copied ever since, because it is the logical way to sheathe a multi-story building if it goes up is with vertical emphasis. Mies, of course, doesn't know this. He's never seen any Sullivan work. It's a pure accident, but it isn't an accident because the problem is the same, that Mies solves in the technique of our day what Sullivan solved in the technique of his. And that is a basic pattern from which it is extremely difficult to diverge. And it is the duty of the great architect to impose one so simply and so logically or pseudo-logically from the nature of the building itself that it will have a beauty, well, almost inherent. It's the slight pulling away from the absolute necessities that is the art of that building. And it may be, and that building may have been much more important in history, you see, than the other two, for the simple reason that it's in line. You might use the analogy to Palladio, which Nowitzki used on Mies, Palladio may not have been Michelangelo, although they were contemporaries slightly. Palladio was younger. But Palladio so vernacularized the problems of his late Baroque time that his name became synonymous with architecture for 300 years. Now, it's a question if Taliesin West will ever be a beacon for younger generation, but there's absolutely no question at all, because it's already being done, that Mies's basic solution for tall buildings will be used. How it will be diverged from will be interesting. But that it will be formed the basis, and I know it is of a great number of us, that we can't anymore try to think of how you do a multi-story, and I mean repeated stories, not a pyramidal composition, but a repeated story building, which is of the essence of the problem of architecture today, as the church was in the Middle Ages. You cannot start designing that without going off from 860 Lakeshore Drive. And that seems to me to make it rather basic among today's buildings. I feel that we are in one of the great golden ages of architecture, and I can't say that from my meager knowledge anyhow of painting or the theater or even of writing. Since I know less about it, I don't want to say that, but I do know that in architecture we have reached or are beginning to reach, and that's why you can talk in terms of the future, beginning to reach a wonderful style background on which to build. We've come to a period, I believe, first time since the Baroque synthesis of the 18th century, when we have a stylistic background that is part of our bloodstream on which we can start designing.